Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report. It is Friday. We're still locked down. You probably are, too. So we're in this together. You and me and Brett Ehrlich. How's it going, Brett?
You, me, and Brett E.
That should be our intro song. We should have a special Friday intro song. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. It should be My Sharona. Boom, 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 boom.
I had already made the intro. It was too late to change it.
You have a really good intro.
The song.
I particularly like the guy who plays this instrument. Someone clapping.
Okay. Thank you for being here, Brett. Good to have you here.
Just quick disclaimer, there's a very real possibility that during the show, my camera will start tripping on mushrooms. So I will have to put my hand on your face. It'll be very intimate, very ASMR-y, and you're going to love it. And I'll fix everything.
That is true. We're going to get it fixed. Some error is probably going to pop up. I think we're ready for everything. I think. By the way, super fast note. This is mostly just to Brett. But like, obviously, you know, the meta mic, blah, blah, blah. If we ever do accidentally say something on a hot mic, we are building up a little bit of an immunity, like with Iocane powder, where we can claim. That could come in handy. Nobody record this. Erase this. But that could come in handy. Anyway, everybody who's already joining us in the chat, thank you so much for doing that. Please hit the like button on your way in before you find your seat. And you can send us comments. You can send us tweets at hashtag TDRLive. You can also send in super chats. And our awesome remote producers will be pulling those into a document so that we can respond to them a little bit later on. Through the course of this hour, there's a lot we're going to be talking about. The coronavirus is apparently coming from inside of the White House, so we've got that. A little bit of positive updates in the almost overwhelmingly tragic story of the killing of Ahmaud Arbery. We've got the Michael Flynn situation. I just want to make a few brief comments on that. More on what's going into your food. Spoiler alert, it's coronavirus. And the garbage people of the week.
It's still poop, though, right? There's still a little poop in there.
No, they're not doing less poop. They're just also fitting in coronavirus.
Okay, so like an everything burger of gross.
Exactly.
Okay.
You have to continually update the everything burger with everything new that develops. And if, by the way, so we got garbage people. That's going to be a lot of fun. I don't even know who Brett's is yet. I haven't looked at the graphics that they've loaded for me. But also, if we get past that, there's just a little tiny micro story. Brett, did you even see that story?
The very last one that I was like, I got it. I don't even need to do this. Yes. I know what it's about.
Okay, so stick around. I just want to, like, I just have something I have to say.
It is it is the dead center of the John Iadarola Venn diagram of desire.
You don't have to put it that way. How about the Venn diagram of John's interests? How about that?
Okay.
Okay, everyone forget this conversation by the time we get to the end of the show. Okay, and with that, everyone, I can almost do that too. Okay, with that, why don't we jump into the news? Things escalated quickly in the past couple of days inside of the White House when it comes to coronavirus. On Thursday, the White House confirmed a member of the military who worked closely with Trump was diagnosed with coronavirus. And that's obviously, you know, quite serious. We do know a little bit more about that man now. Was a member of Trump's valet and started showing coronavirus symptoms Wednesday morning, CNN first reported. He remained close to the president throughout the day on a consistent basis, according to NBC News. And when Trump found out Thursday that the person had been in his vicinity, he, quote, became lava-level mad at his staff and said he doesn't feel they are doing all they can to protect him from the virus.
This is it. This is peak. I guess the disinfectant thing is peak. Mm-hmm. This is also peak. This really essentializes the lack of self-awareness that in the Donald Trump White House, because at the same time that he's like, go back to work, put yourself in danger, you're going to get put in danger, it's all right, some people might need to die. If there's even a whiff that the reality of the actions he's taking that affect Americans at large actually end up maybe affecting him, he gets lava level mad.
Mm-hmm.
Which is ridiculous.
It's also such a weird, what a really weird way to say that. Like, if I were leaking something from inside the White House, I would use more vague language, because the sort of person that would use the expression lava level mad once, that's probably the only person that uses that. I feel like they're going to track you down, buddy, with your lava level mad.
The guy is like, yeah, Oakley Dokley. No, only one person says Oakley Dokley. It's you. It's you. It's you, Reggie.
It's the one guy in the corner with the bow tie starts sweating when the Oakley Dokley quote comes out. But anyway, look, obviously it is scary for people who work around this individual, and not just this individual, but also, as you let me know right before the show went live, an aide to Vice President Mike Pence has also tested positive for coronavirus in the last 48 hours. So both Pence and Trump, I'm sure they're interacting with less people than normal, but they are apparently still interacting with people who have coronavirus. Now, just to catch you up, the reporters say that Trump had at least one day of close contact with this individual, the valet, after the initial symptoms. Trump put out a statement saying that he hadn't been anywhere near this guy. And it's like, I don't understand. That's obviously the choice he's going to make. Rather than just admitting, I worked with him in the way that I normally would because we had no reason to believe that he was sick. Why, like, you have to pretend that you weren't exposed? Because they did that the last time, too. You remember, like, 6 weeks ago, the guy visited from Brazil or whatever, and Trump was like, I was nowhere near him. And then a picture came out, and they're, like, hugging and smiling next to each other. It's just the knee-jerk reaction, the need to lie about literally everything. Even if telling the truth sort of makes you a more sympathetic figure.
Yeah, but that's not the kind of sympathy he's looking for. And he doesn't like
that's
sympathy.
True.
He doesn't want to be a sympathetic figure. He wants to be an apathetic figure. He ends up just being a pathetic figure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you drop off the app. So at least in response to these two individuals so close to the president, the vice president, becoming infected with coronavirus, now, instead of his usual weekly tests for COVID-19, Trump says he'll now be tested daily, as did Pence. That is a big shift. We might talk about that a little bit later on in the show, perhaps.
Well, the odds are that he might beat it. Like, even if Trump gets it and Pence gets it, they might beat it.
I think they almost certainly would.
Yeah, right. But, like, if that happens, imagine the sad, pathetic brag dance he's going to do. He's like, I got it. I beat it. I'm a winner. I beat viruses all the time. That's what I do. And so can you.
You think, my assumption would be that he would never admit that he had it. You think he would admit that he had it to say that he beat it?
If he gets to a Boris Johnson level, I need to be hospitalized.
Yeah.
Then he's just going to say, yeah, I fought hard and I won it. I won the battle.
Yeah.
And so everyone should go get exposed. But can we take a moment for Trump? I like that you're saying valet. I hope he says valet, like he's an old, you know, this is my valet, like the Anglicanized version where they're like, no, you pronounce everything.
Yeah.
A valet.
Yeah.
Like Downton Abbey situation. That's what he has. And I'm sure he makes him dress like that. And I'm a member of Trump's valet. That's how you know that Trump is, like, as much as he tries to be a populist, he's still a wild elitist. Like, who refers to as members of his valet? Like, I wouldn't even know. I didn't know enough about what valets or valets are outside of car parking, which is mandatory in America. It's kind of in Los Angeles, kind of like an excise tax. But I don't know enough about valets to know, like, the herd term. Like, that he's got, like, a member of the valet. I didn't know that noun.
It's a van like of valets, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know for footmen, though.
Valets.
A murder of valets, yeah. So one of the reasons that I wanted to talk about this, and the reason that I think there's a 1% chance that this ends up being an important story, not just a story that's worth talking about, but an actually important story, is we know that for your run-of-the-mill conservative, for them to change their mind about something, it has to hit very close to home. Sometimes an immediate family member can cause them to have, you know, a bit of empathy over something. Not a stranger, certainly, but maybe an immediate family member. Usually it has to affect themselves. It is possible that him coming so close to becoming infected maybe will make him take it 5% more seriously.
No.
Sort of doubt it, yeah.
No, he has... It will not, like, in the hierarchy of needs for Donald Trump, the first one is re-election.
Yeah.
And he has played this, and he has proven that every step of the way, especially in the inconsistencies in his advice and guidance and rhetoric surrounding how he's guiding and recommending states handle coronavirus based solely on what party the governor of that state is a member of.
Mm-hmm.
He gives conflicting advice, and it doesn't seem to bother him that it's absolutely obvious, and it doesn't seem to bother a lot of folks. And if the bothered folks end up not knowing what to do, like, I don't know what to do when it's very obvious that he does stuff like, say, if it's a Republican governor, they shouldn't really reopen. He needs to be on record saying, listen, I told him to go a little slower. And if it's a Democratic governor, he wants to be on record saying he told him to go a little faster. And that's the only difference. But with this, I just want to add that extra layer with Mike Pence saying that he gets, you know, he knew he hasn't been exposed. Everything's fine. He's 100% awesome. Yeah. But when he goes to the Mayo Clinic, and here he is having exposed himself to this, being close, someone's in his inner circle. Same with Trump. Like, that's the frustrating thing that reasonable people know. Reasonable people read enough. They know enough to say, this is exactly how it works. And there's a reasonable pace at which to reopen. But Trump just wants to be on record in ways that are advantageous to him politically. Luckily, there was a poll that came out today that said the vast majority of Americans think that this is too soon to completely reopen. 67% said that.
Yeah. And there,
I'd assume that of the third that said that it's not too fast to reopen are referencing something in their mind that is a reasonable pace for reopen. And they're saying, no, this limited phased in steps I've been hearing about from my governor, regardless of what state you're in. So I think it's much higher than 67% thinks that Trump's recommendations are too fast.
Well, and even that percentage that says, you know, this is a good time to reopen, that doesn't mean they're going to go out to the movies. They might think, oh, I want to have the opportunity, and I especially want other people to go start making the things I want. That doesn't mean that they're all going to start skipping through the crowded streets or anything like that.
And that was proven there in Texas. I was reading that when they reopened malls, like, no one went, and that's fine and that's good. And part of that discussion you're mentioning is the calculus that goes into determining what's an essential business.
Yeah.
So yes, there should be ways that you reopen certain businesses, but just saying we need to reopen doesn't mean you then flood certain, you know, every factory with a worker.
Exactly.
The same way that when you realize, I mean, theoretically, when you realize that some chemical you're using in production is poisonous, you try to change your production cycle so that you don't expose your workers to the poison.
Yeah.
You would do the same with coronavirus.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
A couple of days ago, we showed you the incredibly tragic public murder of Ahmaud Arbery, and there has been a lot of attention on this case in the wake of that video being released. And now, finally, some progress in the case. Gregory McMichael and Travis McMichael were arrested in the death of Ahmaud Arbery. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation announced both men face charges of aggravated assault and murder. And so those are the two individuals seen in the video wielding the Magnum and the shotgun. There is a third suspect that is being talked about but has not yet been brought in, that was a little bit farther away but potentially either has information or could have been involved. If something had been said beforehand about the intentions, this individual might know. And so this is just one little step along the way. But at this point, considering the months that it took for even this step, any step seems pretty good.
Yes, it is. gut-punching how much it takes to just get folks in an insulated community like that to do what would to other folks seem utterly intuitive. Like, you see that video, you do something about it.
Yeah.
And it took an entire nation of people saying, do something about it, for them to end up doing something about it.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I saw Trump said that the video was devastating. That's good. If this is the last he says about it, then good job. But there is every reason to believe that in a month he's going to be tweeting about how Gregory McMichael's a hero and the lamestream media has smeared him. And
well, already, I mean,
who knows? But right now it's okay.
Yeah. But already folks are trying to resurface anything that could potentially in this guy's past seem at all whatsoever questionable. But think back to like the things that they said in the original article. The thing that, I mean, just proving racism, like stopping at a construction site to look in a window is the whitest thing in the world, mm-hmm. right? They think that he was casing the joint. But like, I live in a place where there's a lot of construction and a lot of people walking by. Everyone stops and looks in the window to see how it's doing.
Yeah.
Like everybody does. They're looking through fences and everything just to see, because construction is very, very you get curious about it. Mm-hmm. And to prove their racism, when they saw a black guy do that, maybe they had it before, but it judging from even the story they put forward,
yeah,
like, come on, that is utter racism.
Yeah. I mean, when my wife and I, we go on at least one bike ride each weekend. We just ride around neighborhoods. The number one reason we do this is to point out doors we like, yards we like. You look at houses. That's what people do. You're allowed to do that and not be murdered as a result of it. So just briefly, we're going to have more commentary on this. But before we get to that, I did want to show you a little bit, a couple of excerpts of the interview from Chris Cuomo's program last night. Jasmine Arbery, that's Ahmaud's sister, came on, and we have a little bit on her reaction to the arrests that had just been announced relatively recently at that point, and then also a response to the question of why she thinks this happened in the first place.
Well, as of today, we feel a sense of relief. This has been a long run. It's been a long time. It feels like it's been a long time. So this day was a turning point in recovering my brother's case and getting justice for him. So we're relieved and happy.
Why do you think this happened, Jasmine?
I believe it was a hate crime. It was one black guy and three white guys.
How does that
My brother was jogging.
How does that make you feel, that might have been what took your brother's life?
As if his life wasn't respected.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to say much more than that. I think everybody understands the incredible likelihood that change one demographic variable and this case would never have happened. It wouldn't have even just been different. It never would have happened. They never would have hunted the guy down. They wouldn't have brought their guns. They wouldn't have confronted him. They wouldn't have shot him. They wouldn't have gone 2 months before being arrested if just one little demographic variable had been changed there. And, yeah. I mean, they've been fighting, like, so most people, including myself, I hadn't heard about this case a week ago. They've been fighting for months to get to even just this point, and they're still gearing up for what is likely to be a year-long battle, if not longer, for justice. And so, yeah, your heart really goes out to her.
Yeah. Just thinking about what was happening in the town.
Mm-hmm.
The ex-cop, the thought, like, let's get our guns. Like, that moment when they're like, let's get our guns. Or, we have our guns, let's pull them out. The thought afterwards to say, oh no, the jogger was the one who accosted people on the side of the road who were parked. He was in the middle of the road.
Yeah. Today is actually Ahmaud's birthday. And to celebrate the birthday and raise awareness of his family's fight to get justice for him, runners all over the world, people who've been following the case, people who just feel terrible for this family, are running 2.23 miles, the date of Arbery's death, and sharing their support with the hashtag IRunWithMaud. You know, obviously, stay socially distant and all of that. But if you want to show solidarity, people are tweeting about this, as well as getting out there and taking part as well. Yesterday, it was revealed that the charges are being dropped against Michael Flynn. Yes, that Michael Flynn, who has been involved in a continuing multi-year legal battle, and it sort of seemed like it had mostly been wrapped up, considering that he pleaded guilty years ago. But no, we've got a new attorney general, Bill Barr, and in a court filing, this is from yesterday, the Department of Justice said that based on an extensive review and careful consideration of the circumstances, continued prosecution of this case would not serve the interests of justice. They wrote justice, that can't be what they meant to say, but they went with justice. It serves the interest of Michael Flynn, serves the interest of Barr and of Trump, and of the Republican Party, who has made this one of their like biggest stories of the past 3 years, this poor Michael Flynn who did a bunch of shady stuff and then lied about it to investigators and then admitted that he lied about it and has been pitched as the victim in all this for years now. Looks like he's going to be walking just fine. Just fine.
I know this isn't what happened, but just how incompetent it seems for Michael Flynn to have admitted he did it on multiple occasions and for Trump and Barr to show up and be like, ugh, we can't win this case. Dismissed.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it implies. It implies that, like, they couldn't figure it out. Like, as much as you want to say that you're awesome at everything you do, like, this dude said he did it. And you're like, case dismissed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, look, you've probably seen over the last few years, I'm seeing a comment right now saying, oh, so you're on board with FBI entrapment. What do you mean entrapment? They asked you a factual question and you lied about it.
Yeah. I get it. I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff.
Wait, hold on one second, Brett. The conservatives and the Republican Party love to continually say that they are about personal accountability, okay? Then are you not accountable for the lies that you tell?
John, these are
What's that?
They're all straw men. These are all straw man arguments. They are misrepresenting your side.
Yeah. Look, don't lie. How about this? Don't do the shady stuff. But then if you get dragged in to talk about it, you gotta tell the truth. It is not too high of a bar to say that our servants in government have to tell the truth. And if they lie about something important, there should be consequences for that. Okay, that's an easy bar. And by the way, a bar that every conservative, even the ones tweeting at me or commenting along right now, totally understand. Because if it had been someone in the Obama administration, they wouldn't say, oh, okay, well, yeah, no, they did lie, but it was entrapment. It was really unfair of them to do that. Like, I should not have to continually play the what if it had been under Obama game. If you're a conservative and you make an argument, briefly just think, what if it had been under Obama, if you care at all about being consistent? And if you don't, you should, okay? It matters. The system would work a lot better. Politics would be a lot smoother if we actually cared at all about being consistent with our values, our statements, and our expectations.
Yeah, this is, it's stupid. It's ridiculous. Everyone who says that they want to hold folks responsible for anything, it's lies. And it's all straw man arguments. They are all saying, they say that there are new documents. They won't show you what's in the new documents. They'll cherry pick what's from the new documents. Every reasonable analysis of these, quote, new documents says that the facts of the case have not changed whatsoever. And essentially all that Barr and Trump are citing are Mike Flynn's own feelings about the situation, about his change of heart once he realized that when he thought he made his decisions when the old rules applied.
Mm-hmm.
He made his decision to cooperate with law enforcement before Trump essentially got rid of that old norm where presidents waited until the end of their term to pardon people and get people off for the terrible things they did because the presidents thought there would be some kind of negative political consequence for completely eschewing the norms of justice or at least perceived justice in America. And Trump had just front-loaded all that. Mm-hmm. So he has essentially proven that there should be no accountability. And once Flynn saw that, then Flynn changed his story. Once he saw that he had Bill Barr as the attorney general, you thought that Jeff Sessions was a bad attorney general. Mm-hmm. You thought he was the one he thought the old rules applied, where he said, yes, I have to recuse myself from the Russia probe. And that's the same era when all that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now no one does it. No one does any of it. And Republicans saying that they're for the rule of law in America, that's a sham. It always was a sham, but now it has absolutely been exposed as a sham. And my big question is, in November, will people care enough to make a change, any change? I hope so.
I don't know. And, you know, one particular change could have a lot of consequential changes. I want to play one video. So this is Bill Barr being asked late yesterday about this decision. Take a look at this.
Our duty, we think, is to dismiss the case.
When history looks back on this decision, how do you think it will be written?
Well, history is written by the winner, so it largely depends on who's writing the history.
I mean,
Can I ask the court reporter transcribing that whether they wrote down chuckle, chuckle?
A little bit of a chuckle.
No, let's not move on from that. His chuckle is knowing that he's the winner in this situation.
Yes, and and he's right.
And it'd be one thing if the wins ever came from the thing that America purports itself to be. But these wins came from the opposite of that. Trump winning the White House. It has to do with every change made going counter to the tenets of democracy. Mm-hmm. Every sly little move along the way by Mitch McConnell to block a court appointee. Every sly little move to get all his courts stacked in very shady, sketchy ways. People using, like Bill Barr did, coronavirus as a smokescreen to get Flynn out of the way.
Exactly. Yeah, decide to get all of these things through. Under the cover, because they last. It's not like we identify what you did in 3 months and then it reverses it or anything like that. No, they are succeeding in all of these ways. And
but that's what it is, man. This is all like Game of Thrones when folks are like, honor, there is no honor. We don't even have to work on the perception of honor.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels a little bit like I got shades of Cersei ordering the guy to kill Littlefinger and then saying, no, power is power. And again, that's true. I mean, we talk about that in the context, especially as you mentioned, of McConnell. They said if there's I just saw it like last night, a news report. If a Supreme Court spot opens up between now and the election, they're filling it. And we'll do a story where we'll be like, well, obviously that's really hypocritical and they won't care. I'm going to say it because I care about hypocrisy, but not because I believe it will change anything. The only way that you start to get any wins is to actually win. You have to be in power, especially now when they're not going to give those who aren't in power literally anything and there will be no consequences. If you are, Bill Barr is there to protect Trump's people. That's it. That's the only reason he's there. It's the only reason that he was picked in the first place. And going forward, I will say this again, as I've said it a million times, and if we stumble into a second term for Donald Trump, I'll say another million times. There are no consequences going forward. There have been virtually no consequences up until this point, but there are no consequences going forward. And even scarier than that, there is likely to be no even understanding of what's going on going forward. They're taking out all the inspector generals. They're weeding out the only people that will actually leak anything. They're sacking everything with loyalists. It is not going to be the same as in the first term, where we do a lot of outraged coverage of all of this corruption and lying and criminality and all of that. We won't even know about the things that they're doing to get outraged by it, because they have so overwhelmingly dominated every bit of power in DC. The stakes could not be higher and more obvious, okay? So we're just going to have to continually remind people of that.
And you need to figure first, what are your goals, and then how can you accomplish them? Make sure that you have goals. That's a difference, I think, between the Republicans and the Democrats. Like the Democrats always say, like, we got to, the rules are different. The norms, this is not normal. All right, fine, it's not normal, but that's not a way to accomplish the goals that you want. The goals that you should want are like a Supreme Court that actually serves justice. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you should want. And that's essentially identifying where the position to enact change based on power, where those positions are, and pursuing them. Like McConnell does it, Trump's doing it. Who on the Democratic side is doing that? And I think we all need to. I don't care if it's the Democratic side or not. I'm talking about just folks who are progressives. Don't make it partisan, make it ideological. The progressive side needs to get someone who is more in line with their goals in place, building a coalition, making that happen, and we need to do it immediately.
For weeks now, we have been tracking the situation at the largest meatpacking plants across the country, the rate of spread of coronavirus there, the moves made under the Defense Production Act to make sure that they stay open to stop the supply chain from grinding to a halt when it comes to meat, and all of this lurking behind it is danger, potentially. Both physical danger from the spread of coronavirus, where these meatpacking plants are great ways to pick up COVID-19, but also the fear that many workers will have to choose between their health and continued employment, with threats to both. So I want to talk about two stories right now that involve these meatpacking plants and show a great deal of both lack of concern for worker safety and also corruption. So just briefly, let's talk about an attempt to shut down a meatpacking plant that was experiencing a rapid rise in cases of COVID-19. So this is on Tuesday, March 31st, is an emergency room doctor at the main hospital in Grand Island, Nebraska, sent an urgent email to the regional health department, quote, numerous patients from the JBS beef packing plant had tested positive for COVID-19. The plant, this doctor feared, was becoming a coronavirus hotspot. So another doctor says, our message is really that JBS should shut down for 2 weeks and have a solid screening plan before reopening. So they're reaching out to the regional health department to get them to shut down this plant. That, however, did not happen. During a conference call that Sunday, Governor Pete Ricketts, a Republican, made it clear that the plant, which produces nearly 1 billion pounds of beef a year and is the town's largest employer, would not be shut down. And see, when a doctor warns you that this needs to be shut down because cases are starting to spread and you decide, no, we need the beef, that has consequences. And in this particular case, it did. Cases in the city of 50,000 people have skyrocketed from a few dozen when local health officials first reported their concerns to more than 1,200 this week as the virus spread to workers, their families, and the community. That is a noticeable chunk of the entire population of that city now. And they knew where it was spreading. The doctors did what they're supposed to do. Remember, right now, Trump is saying, if we start to see the spread of coronavirus again, some embers, we're going to stamp it out. Well, they tried to do that in this case. Doctors identified a place that it was spreading. They tried to shut it down. And the Republican governor said, no, we value corporate profits and access to meat more than the health of our employees. And now more and more people are getting sick.
Yeah, it's not a consumer-based approach. It's a corporate-based approach.
Yeah.
And consumer could not be more literal right now. Like, take care of your – let me put it in terms you can understand. Take care of your market. Mm-hmm. Take care of your demand. Make sure that people are out there healthy and safe, and set up all the fundamentals first. It's so frustrating because you see the stock market doing just fine. Tech stocks are up net over the year and things are fine, as you see record unemployment, like 14% unemployment rate, yeah. Plus 20 million people factor into that or something crazy like that. 20 million. I don't even know. It's an insane amount. And the stock market's doing fine. And I'd like to think that the reason the stock market's doing fine is that they have faith that coronavirus will end soon. Mm-hmm. But it's just so, it's so symptomatic of the stock market that as much as they want to say that they have the finest minds, a lot of them, it's just a group mentality. Mm-hmm. Fear drives it. And they don't have any fear right now because not because they have faith in the president to take care of coronavirus, but because they have faith in the president to take care of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's you point this out, but it's such a short-term approach. Like, there are not enough billionaires to buy the products they need to sell for these businesses to exist. It just doesn't work in the long run. Maybe they're just assuming it's cost of doing business, that a certain percentage of the non-elite population will die. And that's what's necessary. But yeah, maybe
there's a small percent that they can. I mean, most companies are not, you know, do not get the business of most people. Right. So a 2% cut overall in your revenue, straight up gross revenue, could potentially be, if what's passed, you know, if precedent serves, could be buttressed by a federal government handout to the companies.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Even if it is 2% of the entire population dies, that's 2% of your operating revenue, which means if you're a big enough company and the government, as it has done before, says we are going to give the money to the, in our still stupid trickle-down model, we're going to shore up those revenues. We're going to make sure the stock market is fine, not so that we get votes. Most people don't have stocks. Mm-hmm. But so we can still get the money in through donations and lobbyist contributions to keep that sector happy with us so we can make ads that convince people that we're working in their best interest when the truth is we are not at all whatsoever.
Yeah. You know, so you mentioned the stock market is doing apparently just fine. I had a period where, you know, because we at TYT, we have access to 401ks, which for every single American should, but unfortunately doesn't. And it had just been devastated at the beginning. And I looked at it randomly. I hadn't for some weeks because it was so depressing what had happened after, you know, trying to save for a few years. And it had mostly come back. And I thought, how is that possible? Like, more like the rate of unemployment applications is increasing every week. We're at crazy levels and everyone believes it's going to be worse. And, you know, not enough people are acknowledging, but I'm glad that people like AOC are, that like in 3 months, the amount of evictions and, you know, people are going to lose their homes is going to be just monumental, a massive tragedy. But the stocks right now are doing well. It is obviously the way that the system is intended to work. And that is very depressing.
They just think it'll be over. That's the short answer.
Yeah, well, they're wrong.
They think it'll be over. They'll think it'll bounce back. It'll be fine.
They should take a look at what happened at the JBS plant. Because the strategy is, we don't need to do anything in terms of testing. We're just going to stamp it out when it comes up. But when they've been given the opportunities, that's not necessarily what they're going to do. If it involves taking a town and putting it back on lockdown, they've trained all of their voters that lockdowns are, you know, trampling on the tree of liberty or whatever. They're not going to do that again. They're not going to shut down businesses if it's going to hurt those businesses. Maybe in some states, maybe in blue states. I don't know. Maybe Ohio. I'm going to let you know that across the country, more than 10,000 COVID-19 cases have been linked to meatpacking plants, and at least 36 workers are known to have died. So the plant that we just talked about, and great work by ProPublica in analyzing the timeline on that, that was very big for that town, but it is way bigger across the country in a bunch of different places that account for a lot of the meat production across America. And it isn't just that. We also, in addition to the issues they're having in individual plants, take a look behind the scenes what the federal government is saying about this. So we recently found out Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar reportedly suggested that the social habits and living conditions of workers at meatpacking plants were the reason for recent COVID-19 outbreaks at processing plants. One representative on a call said, this is Representative Ann Custer, she says he was essentially turning it around, blaming the victim and implying that their lifestyle was the problem. Their theory of the case is that they are not becoming infected in the meat processing plant. They're becoming infected because of the way they live in their home. Seems like a pretty quick follow-up question to Alex Azar would be, why is it spreading so rapidly in meatpacking plant communities and not in the equally dirty, irresponsible people that live in, that work in all these other industries?
And either way, sense. Bro, then they come to the meatpacking facility.
Exactly.
Like, what are you talking about? You're absolutely right. That answers the question already. But like, Azar, you're just basically saying, this is too tough a problem for me. I can't do anything about it. We're just going to have to move on. That's it. Well, instead of that's your job. The health, do health, service the humans whose health are at stake.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. How insulting. I mean, and you know, it's similar to, as I was trying to figure out who's going to be my garbage people, which we're going to get to in just a little bit. I was considering Jesse Waters, because he said the reason it spread so bad in New York is because the New Yorkers are dirty and touch a lot of doorknobs and spread it to each other with the way that they live. Which, okay, I mean, yeah. People are packed into cities all over the place. How is that your explanation?
The reason I died is because I keep getting stabbed by myself. Like, okay, stop it. Fix the problem. Fix it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's...
This is... Every problem's like that, dude. Every problem is like that. There is something that's difficult. That's why we classify it as a problem. It's your job to fix it. And that's it. That's the thing, is that they don't care. They want to absolve themselves of responsibility, and they want to absolve their audience of any sense of responsibility, while saying that the problem with people in general is that they have no sense of responsibility.
Exactly.
Right? That's the argument against Democrats, is like, you guys have no responsibility. You want a government handout. That's stupid. But when it comes to them, it's everyone else's responsibility. They want give the government handout to companies. It's not my responsibility to fix New York. No, it's not. But it's somebody's, and it's our responsibility. And I would like to point, if you want to find the silver lining, when we had to stay home, most people did. Mm-hmm. This is crazy.
That's true.
Like, they're denying the fact. They're trying to misrepresent, as they always do, and that's what Fox has been able to do, is they start pushing reality one way, and then they get enough of a perception of reality that they've warped it to, that then it's that then the consequences are that people start believing that reality and acting according to that false reality, making it a reality. This is what's so frustrating about it, is like, no, just take a second. Touch blue, make it true. A lot of people stayed home.
Yeah.
A lot of – go look outside. The thing that you're complaining about is because most decent, reasonable people acknowledge that this is a problem, and they are doing the reasonable thing to solve it. We can have a discussion around the edges, but the folks who say like, nah, just go out there. Let's go – like you were saying, a Publix market saying this is all a ruse. This is all fake. No. Publix is a glorious institution. It's where shopping is a pleasure. Don't tarnish its reputation by being a crazy person outside. Leave the Florida outside of Publix. Inside, it's Shangri frickin' La.
Okay. Yes, thank you. And we did talk about that yesterday. I will add that, you know, we acknowledged in that Publix story yesterday when Nando was on that this crazed conspiracy theory believing person went on a rant against the employees. But thankfully, no arrests were made. There was no violence or anything like that. Well, I read this morning, someone was angry at a McDonald's because of the mask policy. They left, they got a gun, they went back, and they started shooting employees.
Yep.
And look, there are crazy people out there. There are. That is just true. So be careful when you arm crazy with crazy and say, these people are stealing all of your rights, okay? Now, no one said that McDonald's is stealing all of your rights, but we've had 6 weeks of your rights are being taken, the Constitution is being shredded, they're going to steal all your guns, and it all has to do with these lockdowns, which totally shouldn't exist, and there's no scientific basis for them. And by the way, the numbers are being inflated, and maybe something, something 5G. Now, go out there and live your life.
So, last point on this is that Codfish is someone who's a fan of the shows, and they and someone else are trying to fight crazy with crazy, kind of embracing the Mark Twainism that's it's easier to fool people than convince them they've been fooled. So they've started taking 5G conspiracy like theories and making memes out of them and saying the way to fight the 5G radiation. And then the suggestions are all just, without telling them, ways to fight coronavirus.
Like the like mask stops home. The 5G.
Exactly. The mask blocks radiation. You should wear some kind of cloth covering over your face. Stay more than 10 feet away from people. That's how far it goes.
That's a good point. You know what? I've always been worried about the lizard people tracking me down. But lizard people are mostly face blind. They need to see your mouth to know who you are. It's covered up. Lizard people can't tell who you are.
They use the tongues
exactly.
Of the lizards.
Exactly. It's the forked method. It's Friday. It's time to take out the trash. It is garbage people time. Brett, you have a garbage person in mind?
Yes, my garbage person is Jordan Goudreau.
Oh, that's a pick right there. Tell us why.
I do have some graphics for this. Theoretically, you have them.
You do. I was trying not to go forward, but I am going to find them.
Jordan Goudreau is the guy who's behind Silvercore, which itself sounds like when you're watching like a bad sci-fi movie about mercenary groups, they come up with a name like Silvercore. To their credit, it's not like called Blackstone or Blackwater or something. They went for silver. But it's still kind of conspiracy theory because it makes you think of colloidal silver. Anyways, not only was he the crazy group behind this weird coup, emphasis on the coup, for Cocoa Puffs plot to take over Venezuela at the behest of Guaido, theoretically, while still having connection to the State Department, unofficially, who knows, in a kind of like let the crazies be crazies kind of way. But people went through their website for Silvercore, and here's what they found. There are pages on the website without active hyperlinks, with wording nearly identical to online texts from inspirational speaker Tony Robbins. A more established competitor in the private security industry, and the fine print of online educational website Masterclass.
Nice. Wait, hold on, pause there. Because as I was reading that, I thought it said online text from inspirational speaker Tony Robbins, a more established competitor. I was like, I didn't know he'd branched off.
They ditched the Oxford comma to avoid a positives. anyway, so here we go. When a crisis arises, just to give you an idea of what they're plagiarizing. When a crisis arises, the first thing people often look for is a leader, the person who knows how to solve the problem and will take the necessary steps to do so. This nothingism was taken essentially from a five-sentence blurb. And then it says, except for the substituted word silver core, the five-sentence blurb is identical to a passage on the website of Tucker and Hall, a Jacksonville, Florida-based PR firm that specializes in crisis management. So not only are they the crazy pantses who decide that they're going to, like, you know, skirt decency to stage a coup, some kind of weird invasion of Venezuela that I still don't really understand, but they are lifting their PR Borat style from similar seeming companies and motivational speakers who are equally full of S.
And really fast, because I love this so much. I get the desire to plagiarize, save yourself some time. And if there's something super, like, it's so well worded, so inspirational, maybe I get it. But, like, when a crisis arises, the first thing people often look for is a leader. You couldn't come up with that yourself. You had to steal that.
Would you like to know more? Like, it seems like a satire of, like, fascist propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
In Starship Troopers.
Like, exactly.
That's what it sounds like.
No, it's a good pick. It's a good pick. People died, you know, obviously makes the U.S. look horrible, but serves as a great reminder that the U.S. is frequently engaged in these sorts of activities. Trump implied this morning that we weren't involved, even though Pompeo sort of indicated that we indirectly were. Trump was asked about this during his interview in Fox and Friends and said, no, if I did it, it wouldn't be like a boat of men. It would be like an army. Because he jokes about invading.
Billions and billions of ways. Right. Like, it would be an army. So you're going to take our army
to Venezuela.
Invade Venezuela. Like, that's how
he said it before.
Happen. And it's just like, make America great again. Oh, it seems like we're like, kind of, without thinking about it, sanctioning at least by saying, like, I'm not going to say don't. Coups in South America to install people that we think are beneficial to us, like, geopolitically and on a global economic scale. Like, that's where we're back to. I mean, it kind of makes me think, like, this Middle East thing, that's kind of, like, new. That's why we're still so bad at it. We were terrible at it in South America, but, like, you know, glory days. Let's go back to installing puppet dictators in South America.
Yeah, Nando and I talked about it yesterday. It is thoroughly a 2020 coup attempt. Like, the live tweeting, the weird interest in Airsoft, the QAnon connection. It's so 2020. Very good pick for Garbage People this week. My pick for Garbage Person this week is someone who, if you don't watch the show or the segment, you probably think pops up very often, but actually doesn't. This week, mine is Donald Trump, who I'm going to make him fit in the trash a little bit better. Why, though? Because so many good reasons. It's the whole testing thing. And sure, he could have been in there any number of weeks over this, but the obvious hypocrisy and lies throughout this week about testing, it's not just wrong, and it's not just unscientific, but every time he tells a lie about the need for testing, people are going to die as a result of it. This is about as consequential a stance that a politician can have, to say, we don't need a test for this thing, when the doctors are saying, right now, that's what we've got, is we can test it, try to track it, try to isolate the cases. That's how we can, to some extent, try to limit the damage of this thing. And the president doesn't want this. And so I want to run you through just a few of the things that he's said that that have resulted in him being in the can. This is a great tweet wrap-up of some of these comments from Daniel Dale. In response to the news we talked about earlier that Pence and Trump are going to be tested every day, bear that in mind. Trump today, testing is somewhat overrated. On Wednesday, there are a lot of people that don't believe in such big testing. And on Tuesday, I don't think you need that kind of testing and that much testing. He's now going to be tested every single day. And it's not just him. The people around him have also agreed with this narrative. Take a look at the new press secretary.
Yeah, well, let's dismiss a myth about test right now. If we tested every single American in this country at this moment, we'd have to retest them an hour later and then an hour later after that, because at any moment you could theoretically contract this virus. So the notion that everyone needs to be tested is just simply nonsensical.
Okay, so she was not chosen because she's a super intelligent person, so I'm going to explain this. There is a point between testing someone every hour and never ever testing them. A wide range of possibilities that could help to alleviate the problem.
It's all straw man. It's all fake. It's all wrong. And you know, this is the first person at that podium that I've seen where I really think to myself, you've jumped the shark, because, you know, it was ridiculous having the, what's his name? The guy from Dancing with the Stars on there.
Sean Spicer.
But Sean Spicer, it was ridiculous having that happen. But he was at least like a crony. Like, he was an inside Washington person that bubbled his way up. Like the ooze in, like, or like the slime in Ghostbusters 2. Like, he's from inside the sewer system. Kayleigh McEnany was just like this floating nothing. I mean, and then Sarah Huckabee Sanders, 100%. Like, her name is the pedigree. And she at least, like, she went back. I mean, he was weird. And then, what's his name? The Scaramucci was insane, but it only lasted for a second. And then Sarah Huckabee Sanders, she just did that, like, dead-eyed, like, I'm going to say everything normally so it seems like normal and it's not normal.
Yeah.
But Kayleigh McEnany, 10 minutes ago, I know she made the rounds on CNN saying all this terrible stuff, but if you know where she comes from, it's just a nightmare. It is a nightmare of nothingness. And she is the one out there peddling, like, the baseline for nonsense. The way they used to hide behind nonsense back in the day was to just not answer questions. Yeah. Now they're outright answering questions with nonsense. No one's saying that what she just said is the reason you need to test people. No one's saying that. No expert is saying we need to test them every minute of every day. No, we need some kind of information about who has this so we can handle it. But they want you to bury your head in the sand because why? It benefits them.
Yeah.
They want to underrepresent the number of people who have this stuff.
Yeah.
So, well, that, and they can have lower numbers.
Exactly. And that's where we turn to the next level of it, is the acknowledgement of why he has turned so forceful. He just wouldn't make the tests available and he'd lie and say that they were. That is, I think, different than actively lying about whether we should, in theory, be testing. But he said just recently, if we did very little testing, we wouldn't have the most cases. So in a way, by doing all this testing, we make ourselves look bad. Well,
that's not what it's about.
Again, that's not true. If we didn't do any testing, we'd still have the cases. We just wouldn't know about it. And more people would die as a result of that.
Also, if you're worried about looking bad, that statement makes you look bad. And you say stuff like that all the goddamn time.
Yep.
Like, how does that not ring true? How does that not go through? How are we not saying over and over again, like, you said we should look into, you looked at a scientist and said we should look into injecting people with disinfectant and the sun. Mm-hmm. Your argument is invalid.
Yeah.
Like, everything after that, no human being should look at you and say that you're good at anything.
Yeah. But I just want to briefly mention, so that's why he's in the garbage can. But I saw this, and we talked about this earlier, the changing death estimates from Donald Trump. So another tweet from Daniel Dale. Trump's new death forecast, I think this is from Fox and Friends this morning, will be at 100,000, 110. That's up from him saying 75 to 100 on May 3rd, 60 to 70,000 on April 29th, and 50 to 60,000 on April 20th. And he could keep updating that tweet because this is going to keep happening. Because even though to me it seems insane that you would continually, like, at least now he's saying a number that's above what we're at. Earlier this week, he at one point said a number that we had already passed would be the total number of deaths when this thing is totally wound down. Why would you keep just saying, no, I think the total cap is a number that every rational person knows we're going to hit in 3 days or in maybe a week, but they will keep doing that.
It's weird. Like, if social media is designed so I can create my own reality, why is this reality I'm living in so horrible?
That's a good point. That is a very good point. So you saw Brett's garbage person, you saw my garbage person, but we also polled the audience as we do each week. What are your garbage people? And, you know, we got a bunch of comments and suggestions, and Angel put together a list of four for you to choose from. And here's how it went out. With over 6,000 votes, we had 5% for Kayleigh McEnany, who we talked about, 6% for Betsy DeVos, 4% for Mike Pence. I'm not sure exactly for what. It's just Mike Pence. 17% for Georgia law enforcement. A stunning 69% nice for all of the above. But no, we're going to give that to Georgia law enforcement there, because that's the only specific one. So Georgia law enforcement, who, I mean, waited months, and let's keep it real, if the video hadn't come out, if it hadn't gone viral, there never would have been any action whatsoever. I mean, like, not the entire department. I'm sure there's some good people. But as a concept, as a whole, as a structure, as an organization, into the garbage can. Could not agree with the audience more there. By the way, related to this, I did see someone saying, you said the same person can't be a garbage person 2 weeks in a row in response to me choosing Trump. Let's be clear. I said that it can't appear on the audience one twice in a row. And I didn't pick him last week. That was you guys who picked him last week. I can choose a different person each week. But anyway, thank you to everybody, the thousands who participated in the poll. I think that you chose a great selection there with Georgia law enforcement. And by the way, if you're a member of Georgia law enforcement, if you're involved in this case, do the right thing and redeem yourselves. I would love to see that. I think a lot of people would. Yesterday on Twitter, reporter Ida Chavez of The Intercept broke some very important news, tweeting, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says she recently got a Nintendo Switch and started her Animal Crossing Island a couple days ago. And stop the GD presses, people. It was one thing when we found out way back that AOC plays League of Legends. But now, like almost everyone else in the world, she is whiling away this quarantine time playing Animal Crossing.
Elitist, animal cruelty aficionado, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has turned full Tiger King. And not just that, she has her own private breeding island.
They definitely will say something about her having her own private island. But no, I think they're going to go with Representative AOC plus three are supporting a radical vegan agenda. They've created a world where you can only eat fruit. I think that's the direction we're going to go in.
But anyway. I am so afraid of Animal Crossing, John. Like,
why?
I assume that you build over time like investing, like you have like some kind of in-game currency. And
there are several. There's a stock market.
I can't.
Of turnips.
I can't do it, John. I have Homescapes, and I not only have revamped my parents' mansion, and I have gone across the sea to a boathouse that we're now revamping. Huh. I am on level like 3,500. I don't need Animal Crossing, so if we could wrap this up as possible before I download it.
I played Homescapes, I got to the living room, and then I decided I don't like where this is going, so I stopped. It was fun. But anyway, things rapidly escalated from that initial breaking news. With the representative now being outed as an Animal Crosser, she said that she was going to make the decision, which is always risky on Twitter, to open up her DMs for people to share their Dodo codes. That allows her to come and visit your island and interact with you. She did that, and it apparently was not a disaster. Technically, it was a disaster. Her app apparently fried from the number of messages she was getting, but she did tweet, honestly, never in my life did I think opening my DMs would grant me faith in humanity, but the brief window actually resulted in a lot of these messages being very wholesome. People are asking for surprise visits to their spouse's islands. This is the love everyone deserves. And the thing is, she asked for those codes, and she used those codes, and she apparently visited some people's islands. We have a photo that's her dancing with an individual with a balloon hat on, and I'm gonna say a sloth. She released a screenshot of herself. You can see right there wearing a shirt she made herself that says AOC on it. Cute. And it looks like fun was had by all.
Ah, thank goodness.
I say thank goodness. And I also say that there is one issue with this, because what about my island? I got an island. You can't really see, but I'm wearing a mask because I'm responsible and I have a tie-dye shirt. Is my island not cool enough for Representative AOC to come visit? I did not send my dodo code. I want to be very clear. I did not send my dodo code.
Why not?
I don't even know how to find my dodo code. I don't have time to play these days. But I did play in the beginning. Anyway, I just love... I know that there's going to be like a segment on Sean Hannity attacking this later, that she did this. I just love it. And I love the little details. Like, one of the things she wanted to do when she went to people's islands was, you have a message board that people can leave messages for. And she did. And when you leave a message, it has your signature, and in your signature, it has your name, and it also leaves the name of your island, because everybody has to name their island. And so through this, it was revealed, perhaps accidentally, that Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has named her island Boogie Down. Which I just love. I think that's great. Anyway, this
What's
is
your island called, John?
It's Riley. It's the island that the great old one Cthulhu rules in under the waves. It's a little nerdy, but yeah. Anyway, I just love this news.
Is more damning than the name.
That's true. Yeah.
Good for you.
Thank you.
I made a Cthulhu reference on the show a couple days ago.
Anyway, you know what? Just, you know, I'm not saying you should tweet to her that she should visit my island or anything like that. I'm not saying that.
I will.
Okay, thank you. Anyway, it would be cool. I want to have a political rally on my island in Animal Crossing. I think that would be pretty cool. There's a guy, apparently, that he hosts a talk show in Animal Crossing. He's made a full set. Like, it looks exactly like cameras and lights, and it looks like a talk show set. I think that's a great idea. I might have to steal that. You might remember that not that many weeks ago, I was able to be a guest on the Politicon podcast, How the Heck Are We Gonna Get Along? And I'm very excited to welcome now onto my show, the host of that podcast, for the first time on The Damage Report, Clay Aiken. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to be here.
Very glad to have you here. And so the sort of the premise for your podcast is bringing together people who obviously traditionally disagree on a lot of stuff. And we're in a time where these sorts of disagreements seem more timely than ever. What do you think about hosting this podcast in a very different political context than we've ever experienced?
Well, you know, it's been an interesting experiment. The podcast is an experiment in itself. How the heck are we going to get along? The goal to try to figure out how people from across the political map really can actually sit down and have a conversation without arguing. And I will say, John, the first episode, you were actually on the very first episode, mm-hmm. and it was maybe one of the only ones where people tried their best to do so. So
is it
it's
really
been an interesting thing to watch? You know, I am not ashamed of my personal bias. I am willing to admit that I am a Democrat, and I am more to the left than I am to the right. Or center even, but I do my best to try to call people out on bull, regardless of what side of the aisle they're on. And there's been a whole bunch of it.
Yeah.
We had we had one episode when you were on, I think the first one, where people did their best to try to get along, and had some reasonable disagreements, but conversations. And then interestingly, the very first episode we had after the quarantine, you want to call it that, started, that first episode, Adam Carolla was on, and three other guests, and all of them did their best to try to take the gravity of the situation and have a somber moment. Representative Ted Lieu was on that particular episode, yes. And folks on either side were both very respectful of each other. And I thought to myself, okay, you know what? Maybe the answer to how the heck are we going to get along is an international pandemic and a crisis. And the next week proved me wrong. Nope. Yeah. We can find a way to have partisanship and disagreement even in the middle of a crisis. Yeah. So that went out the window pretty fast.
Well, it might be possible that we can get along during a pandemic, but the pundits might not necessarily. Like, most people out in the country seem to be very supportive of essential workers and nurses. They're complying with lockdown orders and things like that. But sometimes I feel like hosts like me and pundits are some of the worst behaved people.
Well, you know, interestingly,
like this.
I mean, I don't disagree with you. Interestingly, one of the things we talked about on the episode you were on was the media. And I think the desire or really need on especially the larger media networks parts to use hyperbole and to mm-hmm. make things exciting. I mean, it's the news. It's 24 hours and it's supposed to be the news, but it's also TV, and you can't stay on the air unless you've got ratings if you're a network as big as one of the news networks. So, yeah, there's definitely a more of a tendency for those pundits who are traditionally on those TV networks to use hyperbole and to really kind of overinflate things. We've tried with how the heck are we going to get along to pull from both the punditry side and from the entertainment side, people who aren't typically on there. Phil Rosenthal, who created and won Emmys for How the for Everybody Loves Raymond, was a guest this week. Robert Davi, the singer and actor, was on this week. And, you know, it runs the gamut. People are still, you know, people, if they're in the entertainment industry, they know they've got to be exciting if they want to be asked back. Mm-hmm. And so there's some argument. We're in a place where I think both sides are looking for things to be upset about. And there's plenty there to be upset about. But I don't think we need to look as hard as some people try to look for it. You know, I don't think you have to be indignant about certain things with this particular president, because there's plenty there without having to look too hard, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And we should, of course, bear in mind that so your podcast has sort of it's asking a question, both in the title, but also, is this actually a thing that can happen? And then all of a sudden the pandemic happens. I mean, as you said, I was in the first episode, and even then we were a bit worried about having an audience. Was an audience going to show up when the coronavirus was starting to spread? But also, it's an election year and a presidential election year. This seems like the toughest possible case for the idea that we could potentially get along. So if you do survive this, it should be smooth sailing for any number of seasons in the future.
One would hope, but you know, you're right. But I mean, I think that the culture nowadays, and this is just, again, I'm there on the show to moderate, right? I'm there to engage the people who are the guests on the panel in a discussion, but I'm not immune to having an opinion myself. So occasionally I'll share it too. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, my opinion right now is that the hyper-partisanship that we've seen, we thought it was bad between 2008 and 2016. Mm-hmm. We thought it was bad when Mitch McConnell said that his whole goal was to make Obama a one-term president. Yeah. And I didn't think it could get any worse, but well, we've been proven wrong there. And my fear is that if we don't recognize the fact that, yeah, we thought it couldn't get any worse, it has gotten worse. If we actually allow ourselves to believe that it can't get any worse than it is right now, then we really could be in for a world of hurt if it does. And I think my personal goal is to try to identify there are places where even people who I agree with politically or on policy are looking for reasons to argue and looking for reason to be upset. And I feel like if we don't take the opportunity to strip that away and to try to at least disagree on the policy issues and some of the particular gamesmanship, but not some of the trivial. And you know what? I think the problem is this particular president doesn't make it easy to ignore certain things, right? Mm-hmm. Does not make it easy to ignore.
He is on Twitter a lot.
Well, he's on Twitter a lot. And then if he's in a press conference, he makes it very easy to find things to be angry with him about, to be upset with him about. But my personal philosophy has been, yes, not the brightest person, not the brightest president we've ever had. Do I really think that we need to spend hours being upset about him saying we should inject bleach into our systems? No, because yes, it was stupid, but I feel like at some point you have to roll your eyes and pick your battles. Maybe that's from being a teacher for years. Maybe that's from being a parent for years. There are lots of battles that are able to be picked, and I don't need to pick them all. Let's focus on like the real, real substantive ones.
So I haven't gotten unsure of a read off of what you said so far. Do you believe that some of this hyperpartisanship is would be alleviated if let's say we get past November and Trump loses and Biden, or you know, if it's not Biden, somebody replaces him? Do you think that will make it better? Or do you think, I mean, there's still going to be people that love Trump and now they're going to feel like they've been robbed? Like, do you have hope that things could get better if it wasn't Trump in the office right now?
Well, you know, I think that one of the issues that we have is that this particular president has been allowed by his own party to get away with some things that we really probably wouldn't let other presidents get away with. And I don't think we'd let presidents of our own party get away with if they did some or said some of the things this president has. But I think in the defense, and I should put that in air quotes, but I can't move my hands right now. in the defense of the Republican Party in Congress, they have a fear that if they don't side with Trump, they will be eliminated within their own primaries, right? Yes. I don't think that's a valid fear. I think you should stand up and stand up on principle, but they have that belief that, okay, this is how this president is going to respond, and this is how politics is now. And I do hope personally that if Joe Biden determines that he's going to run his campaign based on a return to some sort of civility, if he chooses to run his campaign, which so far I think he has, with that being sort of the main banner, we're going to return to civility, we're going to try to return to less partisanship, and he's successful in winning, then yeah, I hope that politicians on either side of the party won't leave and say, okay, well, this is the only way we can do it. If Trump wins, I do fear. I think if Trump wins, it gets worse because everyone says civility doesn't win. Civility doesn't win and hyper-partisanship does. If Biden's able to stay civil and stay less partisan, then hopefully even those folks who have defended Donald Trump over the past, those politicians who've defended Donald Trump over the past 3 years will say, okay, that doesn't always work. Civility, you know, light beat the dark this time. You know what I mean? And I think it really, that's why November is really incredibly important, at least for me, whether it be, I mean, policy, I'm a Democrat, but even if I weren't, I'd want that sort of, I'd want civility to win. I'd want light to beat dark this time around.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a great point because I know that over the past few years, Donald Trump has shown that he can get away with almost anything. And the question is going to be, is it him that can get away with anything, or is it a person who is shameless enough that can get rid of everything? And, there's probably a lot of up-and-coming Republican politicians that are thinking, you know what? I can do that. Yeah. I can tweet whatever I want.
Well, and we see that. We see the Matt Gaetz of the world who are trying to be as divisive and angry and hyperbolic as possible. That's not necessarily new, but if it proves that that's the way to win, you know, negative ads have always been in American politics, but certainly at some point we realized on TV, whether it was the Daisy ad for LBJ or some other time, we realized negative ads really work. And once people realized those tend to work better, that's why now all we see is negative ads. We rarely see positive ads from any politician. Attack ads on the other side. If people start to believe that nasty tweeting, insulting, that works. If they believe that works, they're going to continue to do it. And I am loath to defend conservatives a lot. I'm loath to defend Republicans sometimes, but I want to be, at least myself, the type of person that I want the other side to be too. And I don't know that that's going to change anything. I'm not going to pretend I'm stupid enough to think me trying to be more fair is going to change anything, but I don't want to be a part of the problem. So,
yeah. Let me ask you one more question, because you, in the very beginning, you alluded to the willingness of some of your hosts, perhaps outside of the, or some of your guests outside of the first episode, to spread a little bit of BS. You've had a number of episodes right now. It's still a small sample size, so let's bear that in mind. Have you noticed a pattern in which side is a little bit more free with the slinging of the BS?
They're both pretty good at it, you know, and I have to own my bias and recognize that it's possible that sometimes BS gets slung from the left that I'm not as quick to jump on. I try my best to jump on it. Maybe I believe it more. But last week, not this most recent episode, but the week before last, we had a guest who is a stand-up comic, former TV industry person who has been telling stories and talking about his experiences with Donald Trump and Donald Trump being a drug addict and coming to the Apprentice set after going to the bathroom and doing lines of drugs. And I was on Apprentice, and I know that's not true. I was there. He didn't show up late. I mean, so I'll call that kind of crap out too. I mean, yeah, I do hear from guests who are on the right that I hear a lot of the talking points that that really kind of baffle me, you know, the Russian talking points, the Ukrainian talking points, the Joe Biden is in bed with China talking points that frustrate me. I sometimes feel like what we get more from the right is whataboutism. Mm. And what we get more from the left are desire to look and to critique every single hair on Donald Trump's head. And again, mm-hmm. there's plenty that's wrong, and I'm all for that, but plenty that's wrong. But I don't feel like you need to look that hard. And so sometimes it does frustrate me when Democrats get really upset about a particular meme or something that he said that was just stupid. Mm-hmm. And then I think Republicans are bigger on whataboutism. And to me, when I hear whataboutism, I hear, okay, you're right.
Yeah, it's a fancy way to admit.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking for recognizing, okay, you got me there, but what about Obama?
Yeah.
Well, Obama's not president anymore, so move on.
Exactly. The podcast is How the Heck Are We Gonna Get Along? It is a Politicon podcast. Clay, thank you so much for joining us. Had a great experience Absolutely. On the podcast, and having you on the show has been great too.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.